are a special recognition and welcome to my dear Chaver, Yedidi Hayakar of Ephraim, who is joining us. I see him, he's crashing this Neely program. I see there are a few other gentlemen who are crashing this Neely program. I think I saw Aunt Sharon with someone in the background floating around. I can't see all the exact screens, but we'll be mochel all those from the men's side of the Mechitza who are poking our nose in to see what goes on the other side. So thank you for, on the women's side, thank you for welcoming us. But I want to just begin by wishing Ephraim Mazel Tov, Emir Tashem, Yisbarach this week, please God, Itai's Bar Mitzvah, which is something that the family has been looking forward to for a long time. And to be able to celebrate a Simcha is really awesome. And Emir Tashem will be able to do his laning, and everybody will have, I would say, a moment of just delight and happiness. That's it. You should be zocha to those moments of happiness. But Emir Tashem, at the same time, although the Bar Mitzvah will be happening, please God, this Thursday on the 3rd of Kislev, Thursday is also the reason that we're gathering to learn together this morning, because it's the yahrzeit of Tzipi Aleha HaShalom and of Noam Rachel. And oh, you're writing it. It's Itai with Sharon. Oh, so Itai is also allowed. Fine, fine. Okay, I have to close this chat. Great. So it's obviously a bittersweet time for the Rimmel family, and it's a bittersweet time for all of us who feel blessed to be connected to the Rimmel family. You know, I didn't grow up in Chicago, so I did not know Ephraim from growing up, but having been part of the Rimmel family for the years that they were in Chicago, for the 4 years that they were here, and then staying in touch even beyond that, and having the opportunity to reconnect on a personal level. So this week is a very important week in the life of our family. And it's an important week in the life of our Kollel and our Kollel community, and especially of the members of our Neely entity, of our Neely. It's like a sub community of the Kollel, of the women who have gathered together in recent years under the leadership of Emma, together with our Women's Council, because this whole idea of having a women's entity, a women's initiative of the Kollel, really was part of the legacy that Tzipi left for us, because when she was here, there was no Neely. It was pre-Neely, but she was really the precursor. She was the energy that got that started. So it's not coincidental, of course, that this morning of learning be under the Kollel and Neely auspices because of the influence and the impact that Ephraim, though Gesund sein, should be well with Nachas and Gesund, and special regards to the entire family, and Lahavdil bin Achaim that Tzipi had for us as a Kollel, as Neely, and as a community. This week, we reflect on and we are inspired by our mother, Rivka. Rivka was a very distinct personality among the Avos and the Imot, as we all know. And there are three aspects of Rivka's life that reflect not just her character, but for many of us, a lesson that we lived and that we learned and that we saw lived by Tzipi Aleha HaShalom in her life. And I would add that we're not just reflecting on these lessons. The greatest way that we can reflect on Tzipi's life and on any person's life to his past is to live those lessons. My mother-in-law, she lived me well, pointed out to me that last week when Avram came, Lispod Lesarva Livkosa, it doesn't say what he said. Chazal tell us he said Eish Yisrael, but the Gemara doesn't, the Pasuk doesn't tell us what he said. Lispod Lesarva Livkosa, and then what happens? Vayakam. He gets up, he buys a plot in Eretz Yisrael. He goes to make sure that there's a shidduch for his son. The greatest way to honor the legacy of someone who's lost is not just lispod, not just to eulogize them, not just lufkosa to cry about them, but to get up and live the way that they lived. So Rivka lived a very distinct life. One aspect of Rivka Imenu is that she was incredibly active. I would argue, maybe you could even say, I never met her, but it sounds like from the psukim that she was very feisty. She was very energetic. She saw something that needed to be done. She saw there was an issue. She got right on it. She's involved. She's texting. She's calling. She's WhatsApping Yaakov Avinu, you know, behind the tent. You need to put this. You need to do that. She was a doer. And Sippy was just that. Sippy was a doer. She saw an opportunity and she made it happen. She saw a need and she filled it. She didn't just sit back. She came here and she was on a mission to do. She was active. She was certainly feisty. If she had an idea, she would come into the office. She said, this is the idea. We got to figure it out. We got to do it. Rivka Imenu, not only did she have an idea and she did that idea, she had an understanding of what it means to take achrayas. It means to see it through from beginning to end with all of the attendant responsibilities. She says to Yaakov Avinu, alayka lascha b'ni, whatever goes wrong, it's on me. I own it. I'm responsible. I understand that being a doer is not just telling other people and, you know, making a few phone calls. It's taking ownership and taking responsibility. And that was something that Sippy did in every aspect of her life. She took ownership and responsibility, whether it was learning English, although when she came here, she claimed that her English was from watching television and movies. But she made sure, you know, she's going to be responsible to learn English. She's going to be responsible to prepare for her classes. She's going to take care that she takes achrayas for every project, everything that she did. And finally, you know, we could go on and on, but I'll regal achas, you know, that Rivka Imenu, she has a very particular interest in the future generations of Klal Yisrael. She's paying close attention to who's going to be the children and how are they going to be raised and in whose environment they're going to be raised, who is going to take care of these children. And so Tzipi was particularly interested in making sure that the children, the girls particularly, would be raised Beruach Yisrael Saba with a love for Torah, with a love for Eretz Yisrael, with a love for Am Yisrael. And so she focused so much of her energy on these children, on the children, the girls in our community. When we got together last year in person, we shared, and I'm happy to share with those who would like, we shared at that time a letter that she had written with two, one of her students, that one of her students had shared with us. And she had this way of focusing on the individual, that individual, to make sure that they would be raised Beruach Yisrael Saba, the same way that she was raised from her parents. And that's what she wanted to pass on to her children, but to all of us who were her students. She had this way of impacting people. And as it's obvious from the way that the outpouring, the way that people have responded to Ephraim and Tzipi, La'av b'Menachem and Achaim, to support them over the past year and Emir Tashem for years to come, it was because of the way that Tzipi not only was active, and not only she took responsibility, but she genuinely cared about people and especially about future generations. Last year, we shared one vignette. I'll share a very brief two reflections that people shared with us after Tzipi passed. One is a little maisa of a woman who Tzipi just came across her, a faculty member who Tzipi came across in the hallway, who had a rough day, and she was crying in the hallway, just quietly by herself. And Tzipi took notice of her, and she went over to her. And she wrote that Tzipi came over and took care of her in a way. She said, she took me aside, I'm reading and I'm quoting, and displayed such genuine empathy that she made me feel so much better after just talking with her. Tzipi had such a unique way of making the person she was speaking with feel as if she was the only person in the world she cared about at the moment. Tzipi had this way of connecting genuinely with people. Another person who lives in the community, I don't want to give away a name, but she says, she writes that Tzipi always had a smile and was infectious. My husband and I attended Kins with the Rimmels during their time in Chicago, and seeing Tzipi each week was a real treat for me. Through our weekly Shabbos encounters, Tzipi passionately convinced me one week to attend a GNOL program with her. The passion she had for teaching and inspiring as many women as possible was amazing. We should all merit to see Umach Hashem Elokim Dima Me'al Kolponim, to see and celebrate Simchas with Ephraim, with Itai, with all of the children, with the entire Rimmel and extended family, Ad Me'er Ve'esrim Shana, in good health together. Thank you all for joining us this morning. B'chavod gadol.
Sorry, I was on mute. Thank you so much, Urban Brands. As I've said before, last year at our different at this year that we had in memory of Sippy, I feel like, although I never had the chance to meet Sippy, I feel like through all of the amazing memories that were shared and down to the folders that I have in my office that Sippy so beautifully prepared for the bat mitzvah program, I feel like in small ways, I've gotten to know a little bit of who this amazing woman was. Right now, you are going to be split off into your breakout rooms. We are going to split up. You are going to learn sources 1 through 10 on the source sheets. What we're going to focus on is, as you're reading each of the sources, try to think about what was a unique quality that was shared by all of the Imahu. We're going to try to look at each of them through that lens. And then when we come back together, we're going to focus on that in our share. So right now I'm going to split you up into the breakout rooms. If you find you are in a room, which shouldn't happen, with somebody you don't know, say hello and then leave the breakout room, come back and let me know and I will reassign you. Again, if there are any questions, write in the chat and enjoy your learning. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed learning together. I'm sorry if there were any glitches with the breakout rooms, but I think overall it went well. Again, thank you for joining this morning. For anyone who joined late, my name is Mrs. Emma Katz, and I now want to review and reflect on the sources that you learned together. So when you were learning together, I said to focus on what was a unifying theme that ran between all the Imahu. And just quickly, we talked about Sara Iminu and you discussed the story of the Hanefesh Asheras Subicharon. What was Sara's job? Sara's job that was that right alongside Avraham, she was out there. It says that Rashi says, Avraham Megayarat Hanashim, Vesara Megayarat Hanashim. That Avraham was out there converting and bringing all the men to monotheism, and Sara didn't sit back and relax. Sara went out there as well. Sara also was there in the conversion process. She brought in the women. We also see later on in the life of Sarah, Visari Eshet Avram Lo Yalda LaShivcha Mitzri, when Sarah realized that she was not able to bear children, she takes her maidservant, she recognizes that she has this woman Hagar in her home, and she gives her over to Avraham Avinu in order that he should be able to continue on their family, that he should be able to fulfill the promise that Hashem promised to him, that he would multiply into many, many nations. And when Sarah realized that she may not be able to help him in that goal, she did whatever she could to make sure that Avraham was able to continue his family. It then says, when we move on to Rivka Iminu, that Eliezer sets out on the request of Avraham Avinu to find a wife for Yitzchak as Avraham's kind of final action that he recognizes once Sarah has passed on, he needs to make sure that the Jewish nation is continued. So he sends out Eliezer, his servant, to find a wife for Yitzchak. And he davens that he should find the right woman who is a balas chesed. And he comes across immediately after he finishes davening, and halavai, we should all have moments like that, that we turn to Hashem, ask for things, and a moment later it appears before our eyes. Eliezer comes across Rivka. And Rivka right away says, I will give you to drink. I will give your camels to drink. There is something miraculous about Rivka. And she feeds him, all his camels. Everyone is taken care of by Rivka. And Eliezer says, this is clearly the woman for Yitzchak, this woman who is able to do so much for others. And then later on in the life of Rivka, again, we don't get to see every part of the life of the Avod and the Imahu, but the pieces that we are told really illuminate the aspects of their personality that we're meant to focus on. Later on, famously, in the story of Yaakov and Esav trying to get the bracha from Yitzchak, Rivka overhears Yitzchak informing Esav that he will be giving him the birthright bracha. And Rivka says, that can't be. She calls Yaakov aside and says, we're going to stop this. You must get the bracha. She comes up with this plan. She says, Yaakov, you have to go out, get a goat. I will shecht it. I will prepare it for your father. I will dress you up like your brother Esav, and I am going to send you into your father. This will be on me. It will be my responsibility. I must make sure that you will get this bracha. Then when we move on to our last two imahu, who are more interconnected, we first meet Leah. Well, we meet them both. We meet Rachel at the well, and then we are introduced to both of them in the same pasuk, and we meet Leah, who we are told that her eyes are soft. And the Bereishis Rabba explains why were Leah's eyes soft? Because Leah had a tremendous fear that really took over her life. She knew that her aunt Rivka had two sons, Yaakov and Esav, and she knew, like was customary in those days, there were families that were set up to marry, and clearly the older one would marry the older one and the younger one would marry the younger one. So she recognized and says, my sister Rachel is going to get the amazing tzaddik of Yaakov Avinu, and I am going to be stuck with this terrible, murderous man, Esav. Everyone has heard about how horrible Esav is. So Leah would spend her days not just wallowing in her misery, she would cry out to Hashem. She channeled all of her pain into calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to try to change her fate. And we know that it does come true, and she ends up marrying Yaakov Avinu even before Rachel does. That may not have been in her control, but the outcome that she desired, she did accomplish. And lastly, Rachel Iminu. Rachel Iminu knew that she was betrothed to Yaakov Avinu. However, she also knew that her father was quite tricky. Her and Yaakov Avinu came up with a specific set of signs that they would use to communicate that she was the bride who was intended for Yaakov. There would be like a secret handshake. There are many Mefarshim that explain what exactly these signs were. However, it was some sort of symbol that Yaakov Avinu would know that he was not being tricked by Lavan. However, when Rachel Iminu picked up on the fact that Lavan was going to exchange her for her sister, she selflessly gave over these signs to Leah, her sister. She made sure that Leah would not be embarrassed, that if Leah was going to be the one that was going to end up under the chuppah with Yaakov, she was not going to have her sister be mortified in the process. She was going to be willing to give up her potential marriage and potentially her future. She didn't know what would happen to her. She gave up those signs to Leah. She took that role of being able to save Leah. So what I want to think about right now is what was the unifying theme that ran between all of the imahu. Obviously, they each are emphasized as having their own unique kohol. That Sarah Imenu, we know, was a tremendous balas chesed, but also is emphasized, like we said, for her work in going out and teaching Torah in whatever way they taught Torah, teaching monotheism to the world. Rivka is emphasized for her chesed also specifically. Leah is known as this person who was so passionate for building Am Yisrael. She also is seen as somebody who has really a power of tefillah. The Mefarshim say that Leah was the first person to properly think HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rachel Imenu, we know, is truly the mother. She is the one that we say Mama Rachel cries, that we say Amir to Hashem. The power of Rachel's tefillot, the power of Rachel's crying out to Hashem, those are what are going to bring us back to Eretz Yisrael, Amir to Hashem, b'mhira b'yaminu. However, one thing that I would like to say is a shared quality between all of them is their midah of being active. That none of these women were comfortable sitting back and taking whatever came their way. This was very much so not an idea of women at that time. I was speaking the other day with a cousin of mine who took recently a comparative religions class focusing on the portrayal of women in ancient religions. And I was going through with him some sources about women being active versus passive, and the abundance of sources in ancient texts talking about how passive women are, quotes from Aristotle, who we think of as this enlightened philosopher, Aristotle saying that the beauty of a woman is her silence, and that women should be passive and completely subservient to men. He also states that when they were focusing on the Jewish sources in class, it was noted that the Jewish sources state women in an active role, unlike any other sources in the ancient world. So what I would like to say is that the Torah is portraying women in this very active role. And this continues on throughout our history. We see in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, starting way from the beginning, when there is the famous Midrash that the men, the husbands and the wives had separated, and Miriam came to her father, as it says, Vayitze ish mi beit Levi, vayikachat bat Levi. What was that story? Miriam convinced her parents to reunite, that the people, the adults had said there is no purpose having children if Paro was just going to kill them. And Miriam, in a very active way, goes out and says to her father, you're worse than Paro. Paro commanded just against the girls. You're commanding against all babies being born. We see also Vatir Ena Hamiel Dota Talokim Veloasu Kasher Diber Alayhan Melech Mitzrayim Vitechayena Et Hayeladim. When Paro takes the commands one step further and no longer, and he is really trying to kill off all the babies, we see the mialdot, the midwives, who are understood to be in the Midrash, either Elisheva and Yocheved, or more famously, Miriam and Yocheved. We are told that the mialdot, these two midwives, directly contradict what the king of Egypt said. That they said, we will not kill the babies. They came up with their own scheme. Paro saw right through it, but they came up with their own scheme to convince Paro why they had to keep the babies alive. But we see that they also took this active role. And as we continue on with Yetziat Mitzrayim, it says in the Gemara and Masechet Sota, we're up to source 12, Darash Rav Avira, Bischar Nashim Tzidkanio Chahayu Be'otun Hador Nigalu Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. We see this phrase come up often, that is, it is bezchut nashim tzidkaniot. It is in the merit of the righteous women that we were saved in Egypt. And we also see that emir tashem bezchut nashim tzidkaniot yigalu, that in the future we will be saved because of the merit of righteous women. That we see that women are meant to take this active role. Women are meant to go out, take action. And clearly that is not just a product of the time that all women were active. Rather, this was contradictory to everything else that is being seen in the world at that time. That women in that time are being praised for being as subservient and as passive as possible. While Hashem is clearly making a point in the Torah, all of the Mefarshim are making this point, that the women took active roles and they were praised for it. Rashi and Psachim comments that we have this idea that women are generally putter from mitzvos ase shazman grama. That there is, if there is a positive commandment that is time bound, women do not have to complete it. As we believe, they have many things competing for their time, and time bound mitzvot will not always work in the life of a woman. However, there is a category of mitzvot that, although they are mitzvos ase shazman grama, women are still obligated. And that is because it says, she'af hein hayu be'oso hanis, that they too were part of the miracle. That we see this by Chanukah, We see this by Pesach, and we see this by Purim, that women are obligated to hear in the Megillah because Afhein Hayu Be'oso Anes. Women are obligated in Neiro Hanukkah because Afhein Hayu Be'oso Anes. If they were part of the miracle, they must also take part in the mitzvot that we do to commemorate. But Rashi adds another dimension to this. He says, She'afhein Hayu Be'oso Anes, Kida Amrinan B'Masachat Sota, Bishar Nashim Sirkaniot She'Be'oto Hador Negalu, V'kein gabi mikra megillah, nami amrinan hachi d'mishum d'al yedei Esther nigalu, v'chein gabi ner chanukah b'mesachat Shabbos. Rashi says it is not only that the women were part of the miracle in each of these three instances, Purim, Chanukah, and Pesach. However, they were the reason for the miracle, that without the women, there would have been no miracle at all. That if we didn't have these nashim sidkaniot in Egypt, we would never have been redeemed. If we didn't have Esther in the story of Purim, we would have never been redeemed. And if we didn't have women such as Hannah, who sacrificed her seven sons, or Yehudit, who took an active role in killing out the Yevanim on Hanukkah, we would never have had any of those miracles. So it's not just that the women must celebrate the fact that they were able to participate in the miracle. Rather, since they were the cause of the miracle, we cannot imagine having a mitzvah to commemorate the miracle that they are not involved in, that they are not obligated in. So we see that women have this active role, and it is very much so praised. However, I'm not here to give you a shiur on women should be active. I'm looking around at the women, even who I can see on just this first screen. And I don't need to tell you to be active. Thank God we live in a community and we are part of a world where women are generally encouraged to be active, participating members of society. That's no chiddush. I shouldn't get up here and tell you we should follow the imahot and we should also be active. We should not just sit back and let fate happen to us. Rather, we should take an active role. That would be unnecessary for me to tell you. Again, I see so many amazing women on this screen. So what is the point? What is the deeper message in this recognition that all of the imahot were such active characters, each in their own way, whether it was through davening, whether it was through trying to truly build up Am Yisrael, davening and davening for children, whether it was going out and teaching Torah, whether it was doing chesed? What is so important about the unifying quality of them being active? And what is the lesson that we can take from this in the 21st century when women are expected to be active, when women are always praised for being active? Thank God we don't live in a society where Aristotle, who was saying that silence is the beauty of a woman, is something that it is accepted. He would be shot down by the media in 10 seconds for saying such a thing today. So what is the deeper message? And to understand this message, I want to look at a bracha that is given to Rut and Boaz. After their marriage, the people of the town give this bracha to Rut. And they say, Vayomru kol ha'am asher b'sha'ar, all of the people that were around, we are in source 14, V'hazikinim edim yitin Hashem et ha'isha haba el beitecha kerachal ukeleya. They bless Rut and Boaz, and they say to Boaz, the woman who is coming into your home should be like Rachel and Leah, asher banu shehem et batei Yisrael, v'asachayel be'efrata u'krashim be'beit lechem. They should be blessed to be like Rachel and Leah, who did what was righteous, who called out in Hashem's name, and who built up Beis Yisrael. They built up the Jewish people. V'hi beitecha kibit heret, asher yalda tamar liYehuda. Your house should be like the house of Peretz, who was born to Tamar and Yehuda. Min hazera asher yitin Hashem lecha min hanahara hazo. They bless Rut and Boaz that the offspring that come out of your house should be blessed like the house of Peretz, who was the child of Tamar and Yehuda. Now, just to recap, this story of Tamar and Yehuda, Tamar was married to two of Yehuda's children, who both passed away. And while she was waiting and waiting many years for the third son of Yehuda to come of age, she recognized that she was meant to continue having children. She tricked Yehuda, and through this unity of trickery where she dressed up and met Yehuda on the road, came about Peretz and Zerach, the children that we say ultimately will lead to the birth of Mashiach. However, this is not exactly, if I was going to give a bracha to Ichasen and Kala, I would not necessarily bless them that your children should be like Peretz and Zerah who came from the unity of Tamar and Yehuda. We could say like Avraham and Sarah, and everything could be more clean cut and simple. So why was this the bracha that was used? And Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein, in his commentary, Gishmei Bracha, on each of the Megillot, he says, Asher Yalda Tamar Lehuda, Yitachin Deha'alu Atah Lifnei Balaz Et Zikaron Tamar Vehuda Kedei Lechazek Rucho. They purposely brought up the unity of Tamar and Yehuda at this time in front of Boaz to strengthen him in what he was doing. Ki ulai tsarlo al ha'ofen habilti hanimusi shenitkrava Rut alav. Rut had come to Boaz in a very strange manner as well. So it is possible that Boaz was hesitant about what he was doing because of the strange way that this relationship had come about. Zachru alo et Tamar, shegam hi nitkrava li Yehuda be'ofen bilti nimusi. Rut had also come to Tamar had also come to Yehuda in a strange way. Ach mipnei shehaita kavanata l'shamayim, hayazara kudash ubracha lebeis Yisrael. They specifically said, Boaz, recognize that although Tamar came to Yehuda in a strange way, in a way that instinctively we are turned off by, one that we say, did Tamar truly do the right thing? However, the Zekinim and all of Am Yisrael at this time remind Boaz and say, although Rut may have done something that seems outlandish, she came to you in such a strange, very active way. Be reminded that the offspring that came from this unification of Tamar and Yehuda were so holy that they ultimately will lead to the holiest offspring in all of Am Yisrael. They will lead to Melech HaMashiach. So recognize you might be hesitant. This very active role that Rut took may seem strange to you, but recognize that because of her kavana, that she was entirely focused, l'shem shamayim, she had the completely correct intentions, they produced great kedusha from this unity. That what I am coming to point out from the Imahu was not that they each took an active role, because anyone who really wants to fight me on this can say, the Imahu are not always praised for the active role they take. You can point out when it says, vatitze Dina, that Dina went out. And it points directly to Leah and says, Leah was also a Yatsani. She was too outgoing. She put herself in situations that may not have been sneas. They may not have been proper. And Dina, before her incident with Shechem, is compared to Leah in that respect. Or you can say, Sarah is harshly criticized by many of the Mefarshim, specifically the Ramban, when she kicks Hagar out of the house originally. Because we say, unlike the second time when she was doing it completely l'shem, maintaining the education of her child, the first time it may have been selfish. She did not like the way Hagar was treating her and therefore treated Hagar improperly. And Sarah is criticized. Or Rachel, when she comes to Yaakov Avinu and seems to demand children, she is not praised there. So if I was coming to just say that the Imahut are teaching us to be active, I would be wrong. Because not every time that the Imahu take an active role are they praised for it. Rather, it is the focus, like the focus of the bracha to Rut. That when they are active, and they are not active out of their own wills and desires, they are active, l'shem shamayim. They have a greater cause in mind, and they are acting completely to accomplish that goal, to further a greater mission. That is when they are praised. And finally, to conclude and really bring home this point, in Sefer Shemot, when they have just crossed the Yam Suf, it says, "Vatikach Miriam haNeviya, achot Aaron et hatof biyadav, vatitzena kol anashim achareha betupim bimcholot." They have just crossed the Yam Suf, and the women go out with their tambourines, and they are there singing and praising Hakadosh Baruch Hu. And Rashi comments there the obvious question of, why did they have tambourines? If I was packing for a journey, specifically if I was fleeing from a country, I don't think the musical instruments would be the first thing that I would remember to bring. And Rashi comments and says, "Mavtichot hayutzat kaniot shabador shahakadosh baruch hu oseh lahem nisim v'hutziu tupim b'mitzrayim." Unlike the men who were so hesitant to leave Egypt, they were so nervous. They had so many great questions. We see that the men turned to Hashem at the banks of the Yam Suf and called out and said, couldn't you have just left us in Egypt? We were safe there. Why did you bring us here? the women maftichot hayu tzidkaniot shebador. These amazing tzidkaniot, these righteous women, were so positive that Hashem was going to do a great miracle for them that they actively prepared to praise Hashem. They brought the instruments because they knew wholeheartedly that the situation would arise for them to praise Hashem. So the message that I want to draw out from here is that the imahot and the women later on in our history were not just praised for being active as opposed to passive. They were not just praised for breaking glass ceilings and breaking societal norms. No. It was that when the women who we see as our role models were able to have such a strong emunah, such a strong focus of where they were going and what they wanted to accomplish, and they took an active role in getting there, they didn't just say, I believe in Hashem and I know he'll do a miracle, so I'll wait for it. They took part in it. They made sure that the brachot that they believed were coming to them from Hashem were actualized through their actions. And from what I've heard over and over again about Sippy, and from what Rabbi Brand emphasized, was that Sippy was a woman who really, really personified this midah. Of Sippy had such a clear focus of what her goal was in this world, and she was willing to do anything to accomplish it, that when it came to educating the women and children of our community, Sippy wouldn't stop. She always had new ideas. She was always focused. It wasn't just doing for the sake of doing, doing to further her own personal growth. Rather, it was constantly acting and doing out of the good of the klal, totally l'shem shamayim. She was always focused on what her goal was and was working towards there. So may we be zocha to have such clarity of our goal, clarity of intention, strong emunah, and a strong belief that we know what we're, where we're going and what we're doing is correct, and always have the kochot and the ability to act strongly, to take an active role in reaching those goals. Thank you so much for joining this morning. May all of our learning be le'iloi nishmat Sippy and Noam Rachel, and may we only join together for future simchas. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much.